What's up, everybody? This is Louis Mercedes. Welcome to this edition of AYNE. Are you not entertained? So the Cloverfield paradox, to follow up on my last episode, turned out to be the exact waste of 100 minutes of my life that I can't get back. And it's unfortunate because I was actually looking forward to it. And it's a bad movie, but I was actually invested and interested in it for like the first 45 minutes. And then I just lost it. The characters are so poorly written. The plot is so ridiculous. And it's what makes it even more shameful is the fact that these are pretty much A-list. Well, at least three or four of them are, I would consider, A-list actors. It's a very talented cast. They just aren't given a whole lot to work with because the script is terrible. If J.J. Abrams decides to keep on going with this Cloverfield universe, I think it would be in his best interest, as well as the writers, whoever they get on board as director, if they can not phone it in as far as the integration and connection to the original Cloverfield. Because I feel like this was just a random sci-fi flick that takes place in space that just so happened to connect to Cloverfield because of 5 minutes of footage. That's pretty much what it felt like. And it left me with more questions than answers by the end of the movie. So that sucks. On the bright side, I actually got to finish the first season of The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu. That is an incredibly surprising and amazing show. I was not that exceeded my expectations in every way. I mean, Elizabeth Moss just knocks it out the park. That was a Golden Globe and, well, actually she won the Emmy last summer, but that was an Emmy well deserved. And well, The Handmaid's Tale actually won Golden Globe for best television drama. And I think it's very well deserved. It's such a dark but engaging series. I can't even explain it. It's very female centric, but you get so invested because the dystopian future that it takes place in is not that far off from what could potentially happen in reality. So I definitely recommend The Handmaid's Tale. It's a great series, and I'm so pumped for a season two. I'm so mad that I just finished it and I have to wait another 2-3 months because it comes back on in April. But The Handmaid's Tale for sure. On today's edition of AYNE, I'm bringing back my man Carlos Salcedo of Carlito's Way since 1988. We're going to be talking about how 1998 was such a landmark year for New York rap. Well, hip-hop in general, but specifically New York hip-hop. We're going to reflect on some of our favorite albums, our favorite artists from that year, why certain albums have aged more in the subsequent years than they were initially received in the year of 1998. And we're just gonna have a casual conversation, and this is gonna be the grimy New York era, basically. The grimy New York era edition of AYNE. So stay tuned.
You?
What up, what up, what up, what up?
You hear me, man?
Yeah, I hear you.
Loud and clear?
Yeah, I hear you loud and clear, man.
What's going on?
Nothing much, man. I'm just, you know, as usual, going back past my bedtime.
Aren't we all? You're at 12:30 over there, right?
Nah, not quite. It's like 10:30-ish.
Man, it's only an hour difference, bro. Only an hour.
Yeah, it's way later over here, man. What's going on?
Chilling, man. I'm hyped for this conversation. The reason why I wanted to have this topic with you specifically because I remember back in Purchase College, we would always talk about this every now and then, how the late 90s had bangers, man, like just in terms of singles, radio play, albums, everything. Like everything was just like the culture was just, it was crazy, man.
Yeah, that this is our golden era, you know, like the older people before us always say the late 80s was the golden era, early 90s was the golden era. I mean, the purists always say that. But of to course. Us growing up, this is always going to be the time when hip hop was just like, it was so better for us. I don't know. I know we're doing 98, 97, and 99. Sometimes I like to throw in 96 because 96 was young. By the time we was really like grasping what rap was doing to us, we were still listening to the stuff that came out in 96 too.
Yeah, so, yeah, absolutely. I was just gonna point that out too because 96 had great albums. I could name you at least 10 classics from 1996.
Of course. But now, like when I was looking at the list for this year, we were saying the topic is the 20 years. There's some stuff I forgot. It makes me feel old. That's 20 years old, man.
Yeah.
Insane.
Yeah.
But let's get into it, man.
Yeah, man. So I woke up one morning and I'm like, man, we're in the year 2018. I'm going on 30 years old this year, as you are, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. So I'm like, 20 years ago was when I became like a real diehard hip hop fan, because in 1997 was when I was first exposed to rap music. You know, the first album that I ever bought was Puff Daddy and Family, No Way Out. Yes, don't judge me. You know, that was
no, that album was fire. Yo, in hindsight, I know it's like the commercial album, but there's some really street records on that album.
Yeah, I mean, that album, you know something? Only a tiny bit of it sounds dated, but that album holds up very well. Very well.
Oh no, hell yeah. Oh, most definitely, man. Most definitely.
Yeah. I agree with you. Like that and Harlem World. Harlem World was Mace, which was my second rap album that I ever bought. But
gotcha.
98 was special by 98 to me was the fact that was the first full year of me as a hip hop fan. So I pretty much got to see from January to December a whole bevy of classics and artists coming out, and the new, you know, the quote unquote new artist that was out at the time that was hot that year, we all know it's DMX.
Right, of course.
Yeah, and Big Pun, if you put Big Pun up there, but DMX was the one that had like the breakout year. I mean, two multi-platinum albums that same year, a feature film, you know, like
you count Belly. You count Belly as a feature film?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to. It got a theatrical release.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I mean Belly's pretty terrible and doesn't hold up well, but at the time, it was a big deal.
I love Belly, but I didn't know it was considered. Like, yeah, I mean, I did go watch it in the movie theater, so you're definitely right.
I mean, look, it was a big deal. It was a film that starred DMX, Nas, Method Man, T-Boz. You had the you know, Wu-Tang on the soundtrack. Like it was a pretty big deal. And Benny Boom who was hot at the time, directing music videos. That was his passion project, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But
yo, actually, fun fact, Harlem World came out in 97, not in 98.
Yeah, no, I know that.
Oh, okay. I was about to say.
Yeah, that came out.
98 is when Confessions of Fire, Cameron came out. I always confuse those albums, which year they came out.
Oh, yeah. Cameron, I remember that July, that summer of 98 was when I went and copped that. But I got another fun fact for you. In My Lifetime, Volume 1, Jay-Z, that came 97. Out. That came out 1 week after Harlem World.
Really? 97?
Yes, 1 week.
Wow.
So basically, that was bad timing for Hov, because Hov was...
Yo, Lou, what happened?
I don't know. That was my commercial break. If you've listened to my last two episodes, that's my commercial break.
So wait, it just stops abruptly recording?
Yeah, well, I think what it is that a connection probably drops for some odd reason. I'm not even sure.
It says, yeah, that's so weird because we went for like 10 hours last time. I don't understand.
Yeah, it happened to me when I had Eric on the last time, and then the one before that with my boy Coyote. Yeah, it's been weird. But anyway, yeah, it's just, you know, impromptu commercial breaks. No big deal.
All right, commercial break. All right.
This is what happens when you invest in a free app.
Yeah, for real. I mean, we're pioneers right now. Nobody's messing with this app right now.
Right.
But yeah, no. it was a bad time because Mace was just, Bad Boy was on his legendary run. Big had just died, but was No Way Out before Harlem World?
Yeah, like a few months.
Yeah, so like they were cooking with gasoline, man. Like it was crazy over there.
And it's great that you mentioned that, because before we talk about 1998, I want to mention briefly how big of a year 1997 was, because that was the last year where you had either Biggie or Tupac alive, because,
right,
you know, obviously Biggie was assassinated March 9th, Life After Death, you know, classic monumental success, mm-hmm, right after that. And then Bad Boy just completely took over. You know, you had Wu-Tang Forever and a couple of other, like CNN War Report. You had a couple of really good albums that year, but it was mainly Bad Boy's playground.
Yeah, I'll read some ones from 97 that stick out from a list I'm reading right now. All right,
go ahead.
Give you some. Camp Lowe's Uptown Saturday Night.
Uh-huh.
Big, obviously, we said that. Boot Camp Click for the People. Wu-Tang Clan, Wu-Tang Forever. CNN, The War Report. Twista's Adrenaline and Rush.
Slept on. Twista, yeah. That was a good album.
Missy Elliott, Super Duper Fly.
Yep.
Who else I'm seeing here? well, this album is fire. I was laughing at Master P's album, but Busta Rhymes, When Disaster Strikes. Oh,
I love that album.
The album is incredible. EPMD, Back in Business. Mm-hmm. Common, One Day It All Makes Sense.
Oh, that was a great one.
LL Cool J, Phenomenon. Is that the album where he had 4321?
Or am I, yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. The Firm, which is.
Yep.
Put the beat on it all the time, but I like that album.
Yeah, that album was alright.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. Who else? Will Smith, Big Willie Style.
I actually bought that album. Don't judge
me. The Slim Shady EP.
The EP, yep.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, I mean, that's some of the other names. You know, I didn't really listen to some of these guys. Jedi Mind Tricks and Mike Geronimo was an artist that was featured heavily in the 90s, but I never really got into his shit.
Wyclef dropped an album that year too, right?
I believe so. No, I don't know actually. Gravediggers, which was like a super group back then. That was the Sickle and the Shovel. Let's see, did Wyclef drop an album? I don't see Wyclef's name on here.
Dropped his album that year.
Did he?
Because remember, he had that terrible BG sample song.
Oh, yeah. And then it was like Saturday Night. Yeah.
Oh, that was terrible. I fucking hate that song.
Man, that's crazy. That was a terrible song. Was it?
Yeah.
It was almost as bad as that song he had with The Rock. That was crazy.
Yeah.
That was terrible.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, that was terrible. I mean, I sang it because I was a stan, but that was terrible.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. But nah, 97 was a crazy year. The Carnival, you're right, released in 1997, June 24th, 1997.
Ah, you see, yeah. Because I remember that song was pretty big that summer.
Yeah, the video was fire. It was like a 70s thing or whatever. But in hindsight, that song was garbage.
Yeah, that shit is pretty bad, yeah, man. Like, yeah, people criticize Diddy for remaking these 70s and 80s tracks, just ripping those beats off, but this was bad.
Now, what do you think about, speaking of Wyclef, just to get off topic for a little bit, what do you think about him revealing that Maria was a Wu-Tang sample that he flipped on the guitar?
You know, I didn't even hear, but I didn't even know that. Well, that's news to me right now.
So the story goes, he said it on Drink Champs recently, that the guitar riff for... Maria was him flipping Wu-Tang Clan Ain't Nothing to Fuck With.
Really?
Yeah. Yo, Lou, this is ridiculous, bro.
Nah, let's keep it moving, man. This is so good.
I'm gonna write a complaint to This is crazy. I'm gonna write a complaint to them.
This is crazy. You're gonna complain about the commercial breaks on the free app?
Yo, that's nuts, man. That's I'm a little peeved right now.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm annoyed too, but as long as we keep reconnecting, you know, I just seamlessly and flawlessly transition.
This guy's a jerk. Yeah. So, Wyclef says he flipped Wu-Tang Clan Ain't Nothing to Fuck With for his Maria Maria sample. He had
for this song. That is awesome. That's fucking nuts, right? Yeah, I would have never guessed that in a million years. That's crazy.
Yeah, me either. And then when you hear it, it's na 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 na, and you're like, oh shit, he sang it over on the show, and I'm like, wow.
Now I got to go back. DJ Khaled's an asshole for that now.
He said, no, actually, he was talking about that Khaled called him up personally to sample the song. He's like, yo, I love all the royalties I'm getting from that song. Khaled blessed me because that song is played everywhere. I was like, damn, that's crazy.
Yeah, Wyclef is eating for the rest of his life.
Yeah, he's good. He's real good. And he eats off. Jay-Z sampled him on 444 for Moonlight.
Moonlight.
Yeah, Fuji La.
Yeah, Moonlight. Yeah, so Wyclef is gonna be eating for a while.
Yeah, he's good right now. He's chilling.
He's definitely
chilling.
So
let's get into the topic before we have the 10th commercial break. We need sponsors.
No, this is the commercial break before the actual game.
Yo, for real. So go ahead, lead the way.
Yeah, anyway, so what I find interesting about 1997 also is that after Biggie died, you know, you had Bad Boy ruling the landscape pretty much, especially for New York hip hop. And when you get into the new year in 1998, this is the first year in hip hop that you don't have Tupac or Biggie in the limelight for, you know, this is the first time in like 5 years since they first came out.
True.
And I think it's just interesting because now you start to see a more, I guess like a more reinvigorated East Coast sound. Because now everybody's like becoming more aggressive because they want that title and they want that crown of King of New York or just King of Hip Hop in general. Mm-hmm. So now you see guys like Big Pun, DMX, Hov is starting to, you know, because remember Streets Is Watching came out right before Hard Knock Life.
Yeah. So well, In My Lifetime came out in 97. He had a song called The City Is Mine, you know, which was.
Yeah.
So.
And that carried over into 98.
So it was just like a culmination of all these people just coming out strong from the gate to take that crown, like you're saying. It was pretty crazy, man. But 98 was just a pivotal year for everybody. I mean, well, I guess not for everybody, but for the people we're going to talk about. Because I completely forgot that Capital Punishment came out in 98, bro. That's insane. That just put you on top for that year.
Let me give you a brief. I'm obviously not going to name every single album that came out in 98. But some of the notable ones I'm gonna pretty much read off. So you had The Lox, Money, Power, Respect. You had Big Pun, Capital Punishment. Mm-hmm. DMX, It's Dark and Hell Is Hot. Mm-hmm. Noriega, N.O.R.E. Fat Joe, Don Cartagena.
Mm. Woo! That album was fire. Woo!
Yeah. Cam'ron, Come Home With Me. I mean, Come Home With Me, you hear me? Confessions of Fire.
Confessions of Fire.
Yeah, Jay-Z, I mean, if you want to count Streets Is Watching, I guess, but it's still a body of work. Volume 2, Hard Knock Life.
Right.
Of course. Lauryn Hill, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, I just read that right now. I was like, whoa, that's crazy.
Yep. Outkast, Aquemini.
Uh-huh. Oof.
DMX, Flesh of My Flesh, Blood of My Blood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the list goes on, but those are some of the more notable ones that, you know, when you think of 1998, those are the ones that are like, oh shit, like, yeah, I remember these albums. I remember where I was at and everything like that. Well, and even on the R&B side, I mean, 98 in general was a big year for music because you had Backstreet Boys, Celine Dion, NSYNC, all the, like, music was just big in 98. That was just like a huge year, even for merengue and, you know, you name it. Like, all genres of music, it seemed like everybody was just eating in 98.
Mm-hmm. Well, another album, like that, another album that you probably didn't listen to, but it made a fucking humongous impact was Juvenile's 400 Degrees. It came out November 1998.
That's right. You know what? I keep forgetting that that was 98. Because you know what it is? Back That Ass Up was a big single in 99. So I keep thinking that that album came out in 99.
Yeah, that's actually, there was the second single off that album. But Ha was the first one. Remember Ha?
Oh, yeah. And then the Hov had the remix. Yeah.
So I completely forgot. I was like, yo, but, and that was crazy because Cash Money was a force, but like, it wasn't like what they are now, obviously, but they were still like selling out shows and moving a lot of units and shit. So, do you count Busta Rhymes' album Extinction Level and Event as something notable or no?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I completely forgot about that. Yeah. Cause you know what it is? That came out at the tail end of the year, right around the time Flash My Flash.
Yeah.
But Ellie at the time, I think even today, is his most commercially successful album. I think it went 3 times platinum or something like that.
Oh, and also you said the R&B thing, Monica and Brandy's "The Boy Is Mine" came out. Hello.
The R&B side. So
yeah, so Monica and Brandy, man, "The Boy Is Mine." That was a fucking humongous record, man.
Yeah, that record still knocks to this day.
Hell yeah. They can still play that on the radio to this day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and so that goes back to my original point that 98 was just big for all musical genres in general. Like, whether you liked rap, rock, country, pop, like, everybody was eating that year. For some reason, that was just like a real turning point in the music industry, because this was like the very beginning of internet piracy, like the very beginning of albums starting to suffer from getting bootlegged and downloaded illegally. Because remember, Nas was supposed to drop in 98 with I Am. It was called I Am the Autobiography, right? But because the album had leaked early, and you know, this is obviously before you can download it, but I guess it just, if you had a computer access, you know, you were able to access it. So it leaked early.
And so Napster or just like forums?
It might have been both, because I'm not sure if Napster was already launched by that time. It could have been, but he basically had to retool the album and package it into two different LPs for the following year.
Oh yeah, so that's what turned into the Lost Tapes, no?
Yeah, exactly. The Lost Tapes. Like, all the unreleased stuff was the Lost Tapes. So 98, 99, this was like the origin, I guess you could say, like the unofficial origin of internet piracy and record sales starting to take a decline. I mean, not really take a decline, because they didn't really feel the effects of it until years and years later. But this is like the origin of it, basically.
That's crazy.
So what do you remember about, let's just get DMX out of the way, because he obviously is like, it's him and Hov that always stand out in my mind, and Pun obviously, but him and Hov are like the two that were like in a rat race to the top for that year. But what were some of your first memories of DMX from 98?
I remember watching music videos with my cousins, and the video that my cousins used to record videos when I was a kid. I think the box was still around. So the box was this thing where you ordered music videos and you paid.
Oh, okay.
And you pay like $2 or $3, and they played. It had their own channel. But I remember the first, not to sound like a rap snob, but I remember them playing this Onyx video a lot, my cousins, that they had recorded, and it was DMX in that shit, and it was the Shut 'Em Down remix, I think. Or it was another song that DMX...
Nah, it was the Shut 'Em Down remix. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and they were all bald in the video. So it was like, who the fuck is this? Another member, like... But his verse was stealing the show. And then I remember when the Get At Me Dog video came out. It was like, yo, what is this, man? Because, like, videos were still a big thing. Like, I mean, now videos are just like, you have to have, like, 5 videos when your album drops for your YouTube channel. You know what I mean? Like, anybody could shoot a video. But back then, you already know, like, we grew up where there was big budgets in videos and stuff. So, or artistic-looking videos, or just cool-looking videos. So, like, I just remember, like, listening to this stuff, watching it. And then when my cousins bought those albums, I remember taking them shits all the time. Me and my other cousin, Chris, we would take them from my cousins and, like, I was just like, yo, this guy is like some on some other shit. Cause I never heard somebody take, I mean, I know I have been done before with like horrorcore. And I didn't get it. I didn't like really do my research on Big L until later. I think the Big Picture dropped in 98 or is it 99?
The Big Picture, 2000.
2000. Okay. Okay. So I went backwards later and found out that Big L did horrorcore like in the early 90s. But I never heard someone like putting like demonic shit together with like street rap. Like DMX was on a whole nother level. Damien?
Yeah.
I remember hearing Damien and I was like, yo, what the fuck is this? This is crazy. Like, this is nuts. Even my uncle at the time who had like, he had stopped listening to rap because he was a big NWA fan, but he didn't really, couldn't really get into the new stuff. DMX kind of pulled him around because he was like, yo, he's doing crazy. He's like doing like creative shit with rap. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
So that was the first album. When that second album dropped, I remember bugging out with that cover. I'm like,
yeah,
what the fuck is this? What are we doing here? And like hearing Blackout. Blackout was on Flesh in My Flesh,
yep,
right? Locks.
Yeah, Swizz Beatz.
Oh my God, Swizz Beatz in his prime. Those beats, man. I was just like, yo, what are we listening to, man? Like, it was crazy. So I don't know, man. My, like, those two albums circulated a lot in my family because we all borrowed it from the same person and shit. It was crazy.
Yeah, your first memories are sort of similar to mine. The only difference being is that the first time I heard DMX was off of Mace's Harlem World album because DMX was actually featured on some songs. And,
oh, 24 Hours to Live,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 24 Hours to Live being one of them.
That's
and then
right.
The other, which happens to be one of my favorite Mace songs ever, is Take What's Yours. And
oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and
that's
and
right.
X was only on the chorus. And I was mm-hmm. like, yo, this guy sounds really unique. Like I really like the way.
So yeah, your first memory?
Yeah.
You hear me, Luke?
Yeah, I hear you. Loud
go
and clear.
Go ahead. So 24 Hours to Live, Take What's Mine, Take What's Yours, excuse me.
Yeah, yeah, Take What's Yours in 24 Hours to Live. So I'm just thinking in my mind. And then, you know, eventually I heard, because Money, Power, Respect just dropped a few months later. So then I heard that song and I was like, man, if DMX is not the next big thing, and mind you, I'm thinking about this as the 9 or 10 year old, but I'm like, if DMX is not the next best thing or the next big thing, then I don't know what would be. Because nobody sounds like him right now. And then, well, you know, obviously Get At Me Dog like caught my ear and it stopped being greedy. But then when I actually listened to the album, It's Dark and Hell, I was just blown away, man.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, this is way too dark for a kid this young to listen to. But second of all, this shit is fire.
Yeah, man.
Like,
it was just so fresh and new. Like, I never heard nothing like that before.
Yes, yo, it was very, very original. Like, he pretty much had that whole summer on lock to like real street music. If it wasn't him, then it was guys like Big Pun and Jay-Z. But for the most part, if you were in the streets of New York, especially if you were an uptown guy like us, you know, I was in the Bronx, you always heard every other car bumping one of those three that summer.
Yeah. The album was just, even and on the low, Swizz Beatz had production on everybody's shit on the low. So
yeah,
sound was everywhere because he was on Hov's album, he was on X's album, he was on Mace's album, he was on Cam's album, so like he was all over the place.
But yeah, he was.
Those projects really blew him up. Those two projects for real.
Yeah, yeah, they did. And what's the irony is that Swizz Beatz only produced Rough Riders Anthem on the first album. Like that was it. But then Flesh in My Flesh, Blood in My Blood, that was the album where he actually produced like almost the whole thing.
Yeah, he flexed on that one. He definitely flexed on that shit.
Yeah.
What do you think about what Hov was saying recently I talked about it in my last show about in his speech for his like Icons Award with the Grammys, he talked about how he boycotted the Grammys because they didn't nominate DMX's two albums.
Yeah. You know, that was a really big story back in the day. And I respect the hell out of that because he was actually taking a stand for quality music because the Grammys are just, you know, whatever. I personally don't really put too much stock in the Grammys. You know, if one of my favorite artists wins or an artist who I feel deserves it wins, then, you know, so be it. But if they don't, you know what I mean? Like, I know it's all politics and shit at the end of the day.
Well, what do you think? You think he wasn't nominated because the albums were too street?
You know, I'm still scratching my head to this day because Capital Punishment was nominated for Best Rap Album. Mm-hmm. And Capital Punishment, as we know, was a hood album.
Yeah.
Like, that, mean, was, the album was fire, bro. Like, that's what you would call a modern-day classic. Well, it's not modern-day anymore, but at the time, that's what you would call a fucking modern-day classic. And
It's true.
Yeah, and I was just puzzled at how, you know, that kind of subject matter and content would get nominated, but not DMX's. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't get nominated for an album Grammy until And Then There Was X, because that was the most commercially successful one.
Oh, that's what's the single on that?
Party Up. What's My Name? Party Up is his biggest single ever. So.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I mean, so it kind of baffles me, but it's very respectable on Hov's part that he would take a stand, because you know him and X were pretty much buddies at that point.
Yeah.
So,
but it's interesting because those are the three albums you say stake out that year, and two of those three albums were nominated, but. It's like, I don't know. What were the singles for? What was the single for It's Dark and Hell is Hot? It was Stop, Drop, Shut Up.
Yeah, okay. So it was Rough Riders Anthem was the third single, mind you. But it was Get At Me Dog, Stop Being Greedy, Rough Riders Anthem, and How's It Going Down. Mm-hmm. Those were the four singles. And Rough Riders Anthem got mad play. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you couldn't go anywhere without knowing who sang that song and what song that was.
Yeah, you couldn't escape that melody. Bah, bah, da, da, da. That shit was
exactly. And I'm very confused even to this day as to why neither one of those albums didn't get nominated.
Well, what was the single for Flesh of My Flesh?
Slipping and No Love For Me. Because I think that album only had two singles. Because remember, it was a quick turnaround from the first album.
That's true. I'm trying to think. What was it? I thought there was a third female. I thought there was a female song on there. Nah.
Well, no. Flesh of My Flesh had Coming From, mm-hmm. With Mary J. Blige, but that wasn't a single.
Right.
And then How's It Going Down?
That's what I was thinking of. How's It Going Down? Was that a single?
Yeah, that was the fourth single off It's Dark and Hell is High. They put Faith Evans on the radio version.
Right.
Yeah, and that's just kind of. It's just very, very, very baffling, very mind-boggling how that album didn't get any type of recognition whatsoever.
You know what's crazy?
It went on to sell 4 million copies.
If you think about it, Slippin' is like a song you could use for depression right now. Like that, if you look at hindsight, that song was like could help people get out the freaking get out the hole that they're in emotionally, man.
Of course, yo, there are people that aren't even into gangster rap or anything like that, but they like Slipping, like songs like that, because mm-hmm. It is kind of a motivational, uplifting song, somewhat, mm-hmm. You know. But I think it's how everything comes full circle, right? Like he boycotts the Grammys, and then he's getting an Icon Award.
Yeah, that's nuts, man. That's crazy. And it was what the joke was that he went to the Grammys and sat front row, but didn't win anything. But I was just like, I mean, you know, you give and take. You give and take. Yeah, I'm not an award, but you don't win a Grammy, you know?
Hey, he won in 98. He won a ton of awards in 98. I think he won like 8 for Hard Knock Life.
Yeah.
Which is a perfect segue. Now let's talk about Hov's breakout year. Because Jay-Z was somebody who I liked, and I liked his voice based off of what I had previously heard. You know, I went back and listened to Reasonable Doubt real late, way later. And honestly, I don't think I would have enjoyed it that young either, because that's really a grown man's album.
Yeah, it really is. The presentation, the beats, like it's not like boom bap. He just got out the boom bap era, and it was more these sample heavy, like Regal type of feeling beats and shit. You know, it was very different.
Yeah, I liked Volume 1 because Volume 1 was a reflection of the climate that was going on in 97 with the whole Bad Boy shit. So, you know, he kind of took the commercial route, but that was the, you know, as a young boy, that's the music that I gravitated towards when I first got into hip-hop because it was commercially accessible. So, with that being said, Hove pissed off a lot of people with Volume 1 because they were like, yo, what the hell is this? After you just released an underrated bona fide classic, or at least it's going to be considered a classic years from now. And then you come out with this. Not to say that Volume 1 is a bad album, because it's not by any means, but it really pales in comparison to the first album.
Oh, yeah, it's a complete 180 from what the first album presented. Hell yeah, hell yeah.
So then you in 98 you see Hove is kind of like at a crossroads. So this is where he has to make a decision. Do I go back to just putting out pure street music, or do I continue with the commercial shit, or do I smarten up, dumb down my lyrics a little bit, get more polished production and cater to both
artists? Yeah, he merged it, man. He really fucking, that's what I always defend that album, like, as far as like, all right, it's the album that broke him up, that blew him up, 5 million records and all that, but if you listen to it, it's a really good it's a good balance, man, because there's some street records. If I Should Die, it was on good just a week ago. I was just like, yo, this is crazy for people to just remember the fucking Annie sample. There's some crazy songs on this album, man.
Yeah, and I love It's All Right.
Oh, It's All Right with Bleak. Hell yeah, man. I love that song too.
No, not It's All Right. It's Like That. That's what I mean. No, It's All Right.
Oh, with fucking It's Like Capri.
That. Capri. Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, that joint is fire. But you know why Hov played it smart that year? Because he released Streets Is Watching. Now, for those of you who never heard of Streets Is Watching, like if you're a younger Jay-Z fan, Streets Is Watching was not really an album. It was sort of a compilation of miscellaneous material, but it was because he actually released it on tape too, right? Didn't he have like a video for every song or something like that?
No, it was a movie with thank you to our lovely sponsors at Nike for that commercial break.
Yo, he's gonna come knocking on your door, bro. Yeah, my bad. Yeah, I'm misinformed. The Streets Is Watching, because like that shit came out so long ago, I don't even remember what the fuck it was. I remember the album itself was hot.
Yeah, so it was like a one of those video album shits that they were putting out a while ago. So like it was like a bullshit storyline to each song that was on Volume 1, and then they had a compilation album which served as the quote unquote soundtrack to the little movie. I have the shit on DVD somewhere, but it was crazy because he had videos for Friend of Foe, Part 1, and then he had videos for Cough Up a Lung, Where I'm From, Marcy's Son.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He had a video for a song with Sauce Money. So there was a couple of joints on there, but it was basically like a long version of a music video, a couple of music videos with a storyline on cassette, on VHS, excuse me. So I really don't count it, but I guess just we have to go chronologically for that year, right? You counting it?
Well, I'm not counting it as an album because it's not really an album, and you know it's one of those asterisks in Jay-Z's discography,
right?
But I think it's important to mention that because that was just like hood Jay-Z, that was hood Hov,
yeah,
and he's basically giving you like, you know, a preview of what he's still capable of despite all the skepticism that he was facing after Volume 1. This Volume 2 only came out a mere, what, 2-3 months after that Streets Is Watching record or soundtrack drop.
Right.
So, but man, 45 King with that Annie sample. Once that fucking Hard Knock Life ghetto anthem came out, it was like, all right, like Jay-Z's on to something here.
Yeah, yeah. Even when I hear that song now, I never really liked it, honestly, because the sample was just so annoying to me. But when I hear the song now, like he's performed it live, I'm like, yo, I forgot. Like he was kind of like saying the song too, you know. Like he was kind of like still trying to rap a little bit more than maybe he should have on the album, on that song and stuff. But like I used to never get past the first verse because I'm like, yo, I want to skip to the next song. And I think the next song on the album was like If I Should Die right after or some shit like that. But
If I Should Die.
Yeah, but that shit just blew him into a whole nother. It's crazy because when you think of the Annie sample, that sample is really like what she's saying really relates to us, relates to Latino and Black struggles in poverty and shit in inner city America. It's pretty fitting for the song and shit.
It was fitting in my life personally because I had learned that album came out right when I started fifth grade. In the fourth grade was when we had watched Annie in school. Because we were learning about... I forgot what we were learning about.
Oh, really? Right? A year before you saw Annie in school? That's crazy.
Not even a year before. I'm telling you, like, less than a year. Like, I'm going to say, like, maybe 6 months, 7 months before that song dropped. So when the track dropped, I instantly recognized that sample. I was like, holy shit, that's Annie.
That's crazy.
Like, that's pretty fucking cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and, you know, Volume 2 was, to add on to what you were saying... how there's certain albums that got passed along with your cousins and stuff like that. Volume 2 was one of those albums.
Yo, for real, man. For me. Everybody had to take that shit from somebody. Cause, man, remember back
yeah,
then,
even if
CDs was like $15 to $18 full price and shit, man.
Yeah, it's true. The amazing thing about Volume 2 is it sold 5 million copies. Right. Okay, that is huge, even... Well, obviously, it's huge by today's standards because nobody sells like that. But for 1998, for a guy who was nowhere near as big as most other artists coming out, he just came out the gate. His third album, 5 million copies, nominated for multiple Grammys. And all of a sudden, Jay-Z is a household name.
It's true.
It took 2 or 3 years, but he's all of a sudden a household name. Like, what do you... I guess my question is, what do you think? How do you think that all unfolded? Like, or rather, why do you think it happened that way?
I guess it was just.
My bad. We pretty much hit the main points before about how he balanced the commercial shit with the street stuff, but like, I feel like there's more to that though.
I don't know. I think it's a combination of just. The climate, man, like New York was really like just pumping out great shit, Vacant. So I think it just carried over from 96, 97 all the way up. And it just, people just started coming out with their best shit. Cause it's like, who's gonna represent the East Coast and New York the best? And who's gonna wear the crown? So, but I really think, like we said before, our point earlier, it was just, he mixed everything in so well. Like the Annie sample brought in these people from middle class America and the suburbs. It's like, okay, this is a song that's playing on the radio. Let me buy his album. And then when they heard the album, it was like a bunch of this street shit. And just the sounds too, man. He opens with a Primo beat. He got fucking Swiss Beats does 1, 2, 3 beats. Timbo has 2 beats on there. One of them.
Actually, I think he has 3.
I'm looking at it now. Timbo has Paper Chase and Nigga What, Nigga Who.
Oh, that was it? I thought it was one.
And then what else is on? Can I Get It was another sample, and that was tied into the Rush Hour soundtrack.
That was huge.
That was insane, man. Like, so I don't know, man. This album was just the one, man. He put all the right things together. He had another big artist. He had the Lox on here. Other New York artists that are killing. DMX was on Money Cash Hoes, another humongous single. Like, it was just so much going on in this album, man. What do you think now? Do you think it holds up still? Is it still considered do you still consider it like a classic up there?
You know, if you had asked me that question 10 years ago, I would have said no. And only because I feel like Jay-Z has better albums. But now that I'm feeling more nostalgic and I'm older now, I can honestly say that album that's a definitive album of that era. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't deny that. I mean, there's a reason why it's still, to this day, it's still Hov's highest selling release. Mm-hmm. Like, he has not topped record sales with any album after that.
Right.
And that is amazing because, like, obviously Hov became bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. But that was his highest-selling album.
Yeah, I mean, and, like, even after, like, the only person to sell records like that after that was, like, 50, and
Eminem, yeah,
Eminem, got you know, but like, I mean, they were still in an era where people were buying CDs. I mean, like you said, piracy was about to start making its rounds, but people were still buying CDs, man. I mean, I bought Get Rich or Die Trying.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah, like, I bought the early Eminem joints. So I was just like, all right, but like, I feel like nothing's ever going to do as well as those albums in the late 90s, early 2000s, because that's it. Piracy is taking over, you know? I mean, I got Apple Music, I got Tidal. Like, I don't need to buy anything anymore. I only support who I want to support and go out there and buy it.
But, yeah, you're totally right. Yeah, that's a good point, because back then you... I mean, obviously, if you didn't buy the CD in stores, you bought the bootleg. Yeah. I mean, you're part of New York culture, you know... That
you oh, go yeah, out the yeah, of course. There was dudes with sheets ready with all the CDs.
Yeah, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that's such a New York. I mean, I don't know how it was in other states, but that's definitely a staple of New York music.
Shit, back man, I remember buying Best of Both Worlds, the Jay-Z and R. Kelly album before it came out, right? And it had different verses, two or three songs I never heard before that did not make it to the fucking real album. I was like, yo, this is crazy. I got like a real exclusive here. This is nuts.
Well, you know, that's how Volume 3 was, right? Like, just to get off topic a little bit, Volume 3, a year later, if this is like a somewhat of an urban legend, that not even an urban legend because it's factual, but if you bought the bootleg CD of Volume 3, Life and Times of S. Doc Carter, mm-hmm. anything that ended up on Beanie Siegel's debut album, you know that track, I Do Anything.
Yeah, yeah. Anything that was a bonus track.
Yeah, that was on Volume 3 as a hidden bonus track. And I think there was like another bonus track too that I had heard through the grapevine.
Girl's Best Friend.
One of the instances. No, Best Friend. No, Girl's Best Friend is still on the regular CD.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying like if you bought like the... It was almost as if that was like the promotional bootleg version of the album. A week or two, but that's just one of those funny stories that you can only hear from word of mouth from people that actually experienced it.
Well, what's the alleged album? Allegedly, because he beat it. What's the album that he supposedly, allegedly stabbed Unf over? Is it Volume 3?
Yeah, I think it was Volume 3, because when did that whole thing happen? Like late 98, right? Early 99 or something like that?
Yeah. And it was
So this is post Volume 2, pre Volume 3.
Yeah, and it was over the bootlegging. He stabbed him because he had heard that he was bootlegging his album. It was crazy.
Yeah, because a dude that used to work in the, he worked at the New York Post at the time I was working in the Fox News, the News Corp building. He had told me that same exact story, because he's obviously, you know, he's old and he's a big Jay-Z fan, but he said the same thing. That whole controversy with Jay-Z and Un, that might have been over that same bootleg.
Over the bootleg thing?
Yeah, that might have been the issue, that the album leaked and there was some tracks that he didn't want on the to make the cut. And you know, no one really knows what happened. Like I think there's like several accounts of what actually happened. Mm-hmm. But you know that's just one of those things where you were either there or you weren't.
Yeah, for real.
Because I'm pretty sure he'll deny that shit to this day.
Yeah. There was no fucking camera phones to incriminate anybody back then. So.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't do shit anymore. You can't even fucking pick your boogers. You'll be on TMZ the next day.
Yeah, that's true.
That's my opinion on that on that album. We got to get to X, man. Come on, let's. Or did we cover? Well, we're going to let's go to Capital Punishment. What's your thoughts?
Yo, Capital Punishment was fire. Like, I loved it. But yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
18th anniversary of his death, and I still don't think he gets as much credit as he should be getting.
Yo, that album had fucking 24 songs in that shit. That shit was an hour and 11 minutes long, bro.
I know. And there's not a whole lot of filler on it for 24 tracks. I think there might be like two songs that I'm not crazy about, but everything else is dope. All
right, let me run through it real quick. So the intro, Beware, is fucking insane. Super lyrical with Black Thought.
Classic.
He got Black Thought off of a fucking Off the Roots beat and got him on a Rockwilder beat.
Yep.
Taste of Choice was a skit. Still Not a Player with Joe. Another skit, The Dream Shatterer. Holy shit. Punish Me featuring Miss Jones. That I guess that's one of the songs I didn't like.
I like that song.
Yeah. Packing a Mac, part one was a classic skit. You Ain't a Killer, insane. Packing a Mac, part two, another classic skit. Caribbean Connection with Wyclef, yo.
Fire.
Glamour Life, I met Cuban Link 2 years ago, and I told him that Glamour Life and Off the Books were like verses that I was memorizing, like the Bible. He was like, yo, thank you, man. Glamour Life is crazy with the whole Terror Squad. Capital Punishment featuring Prospect, fire. Uncensored with Flex, that's a skit. That was hilarious. I'm not a player. The original I'm Not a Player was crazy.
I loved it.
Yo, he was really rapping on that one.
My torture chamber, feed the loca chocha pinga while I force my fingers with my ball ass linger.
Yo, fire. On another level, man. Twins, obviously. I forgot.
Wow. Yeah, just keep going.
The Rain and the Sun featuring Dead Prez. I don't remember that song too much.
No, it's just it's like a beat in the background and Dead Prez, they're singing and stuff, and then it's an interlude basically, but it's a nice smooth interlude.
Boomerang.
Yeah, that's one of the songs that I'm not too crazy about.
Right. You Came Up with Nori was hilarious video, fire ass song.
Yeah, that was great.
That video, he was like a secret agent and shit. That shit. Tres Leches, oh my god, that song is crazy. RZA on the beat. Respect the Deck and Prodigy. Charlie Rock shout was when his boy that was locked up. Fast Money was a fire ass story song.
Yeah, that was all right.
Yeah, and then Parental Discretion featuring Busta.
That was like the perfect ending to that album.
Yeah, I gotta listen. I gotta revisit that song because I don't remember it.
Yeah, that song and that beat was bananas.
Yeah, this. There's like maybe two or three songs that maybe are not that good, maybe two. And that's still 22 songs of fire, you know what I mean? Even the skits were hilarious, so he was an actual funny guy.
That album is a classic, and it went double platinum. It's not even like you can call this a hood classic because people went out and bought it.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, you know what I mean? Like, this album was nominated for a Grammy, too, and he made history. He was the first Latin rapper to go platinum,
it's true.
You know?
It's true. I'm trying to think. It came out April 28th,
1998. Yeah, month before Is Dark and Hell Is Hot.
Right. Did they ever collaborate on anything?
Pun and X.
Freestyle maybe.
Wow, you know what? That's interesting. I don't think so.
They might have did a freestyle together.
They might have. Oh, you know what? There's that famous footage of them two with sitting with Cannabis and I forgot who else was in the video, but they just basically spit in some verses. But they never actually collaborated on Wax.
It was written from their albums. I remember that.
Yeah, it was just written verses. Yeah.
Yeah. Nah, that album is a fucking classic, man. I remember one time I was revisiting the album in high school and I had printed out the lyrics of You Ain't a Killer. And I was bored in the science class reading the lyrics, and the professor comes up in my science class in high school. He grabs a piece of paper from my desk. He starts reading it, and he's like, yo, what the fuck are you into? I'm like, yo, it's just music. It's just music, man. He was just like, yo, this is some demonic shit. Can you put this away, please? I'm like, yeah. And he was British, so it just sounded way funnier and shit. You know, I was just like, all right, let me put this away. But back then, we didn't have Rap Genius. We had, I don't know if you remember, Ola.
Oh, yeah, I remember all that. Yeah, that's where I used to get my lyrics from.
Exactly. So I printed them shits out from there, and I remember reading the lyrics to Beware, and it was just like, and Pun was one of, the album's one of those albums that you could listen to it now, and so shout out to New Balance, another footwear
Yeah, you gotta break up the sketches. No, wait, a quick sidebar. I think Anchor's starting to place restrictions on this stuff, because I'm noticing that the last couple of times we got cut off, it was at the 5 minute mark.
Yeah, what happened? It was like 8 before, and now it's 5. They're gonna do 3 minutes soon. I'm gonna try calling into your show and seeing if it's a little longer on my end. We'll try that next.
Yeah, it could be a connection error. But anyway, you were saying.
What was I saying? Oh shit! What was I saying?
Oh man, Pun.
Pun.
Capital punishment.
Capital punishment. Fun. Three words, two syllables.
I swear to God, I just had it in my mind because you were getting ready to explain it.
Damn, that's trash.
This is gonna be hilarious on playback, by the way.
Yo, for real. damn, man, I'm sick right now, bro. It was a good point. It was a great point.
I know, because we were mentioning how, like, oh, okay, you were getting ready to mention that it was one of those albums that you can revisit and still dissect.
Oh, yeah. I still catch mad shit. He was super intelligent. Like, he was saying some crazy shit. I still catch a lot of bars that, I mean, like you said, we're really young. So even some of the drug references I catch now, and I'm like, oh, that's what they were saying. I forgot. I didn't even notice that. Like, you know, like,
a lot. Yeah, that happened to me today when I was washing dishes, revisiting some Capital Punishment songs. I was like, oh.
Yeah, really? Man. Even like some of the stuff, even like you could tell, like, his intelligence, like I said, like some of the stuff he was talking about, like some of the words he was using was like, damn, I didn't know what that word meant back then. And it's not even like, it's not even because it's a curse word or it's vulgar. It's just like, I didn't know what that word meant. Like, that's crazy.
Some
of the stuff he referenced was crazy. And like, just the Pun just put wild words together and made it rhyme, man. Like, I remember Nas saying this several times, like, even on Book of Rhymes in Godson, he said Pun was the last shining star I've seen. Like, nobody, there's never gonna be another Big Pun, man. Like, even in the documentary, remember the documentary? Method Man said that they didn't even think they didn't even know he was Latin. They thought he was black when they heard him.
It was crazy, man.
But yeah, this album, I'm about to listen to it again after this shit, because this shit was something else, man. Something else.
Yeah, it really was. It was it was basically the Bronx version of Ready to Die.
Yeah, for real.
That's exactly what it was, because Pun's direct influence was obviously Biggie. I mean, you can see the influences, but he was just way more lyrically complex.
Way more lyrical. Oh my God. The flows, the quadruple, triple entendres, like, it was just like, and for such a big guy, like all them little legendary stories we heard growing up, they used to have the fucking air tanks in the studio because he had problems breathing and shit to do some of those verses. Like, I remember hearing shit like that. Like, crazy, man. Crazy stuff, man. But
I would have loved to hear him and M either A, on a track together on Wax, or B, battle it out. Because their rhyme styles are very similar.
Did they ever cross paths? I feel like I've heard something like that before. Like, did they ever, like, talk about something? Like, did they ever, like, because I asked that because things are starting to get revealed more and more. Like, apparently, I didn't know this. Apparently, it was kind of common knowledge, but Fat Joe and Biggie were going to put out an album together? And it was
I didn't know that. I was not aware of that at all.
I saw in an interview that, because Fat Joe has been around a long time, bro. If you really think about it. Flo Joe was like, what, 91 or some shit like that? 92?
Yeah, I think it was like 93, 94.
Yeah, so like, he was around the same time. So apparently they were going to do an album together. And like, he said that the stuff they was working on, that they was just like, it was like so crazy and disrespectful and and vulgar. He talked about it briefly on the Everyday Struggle show, and I think he talked about it somewhere else, but like, they were supposed to do a joint album together, and it was going to be insane. If that would have came out, it would have been a crazy couple years. That we probably would have still been dissecting that album today.
Yeah, I know, right?
But Pun, I feel like, damn, Eminem was rubbing shoulders with people that Pun would have, you know, been rubbing shoulders with, I feel like, because he was from that.
Yeah, '98, Eminem was on the cusp of blowing up, because the Slim Shady LP came out in February of '99. So he was like right there on the cusp, like still putting out underground music.
So
that's just one of those interesting things, that like those dream collaborations that, you know, unfortunately will never happen.
Yo, M in his prime and Pun in his prime, that those 2 years right there, that would have been insane.
That's what I'm saying. That would have been too much for anybody's ears.
Yeah, people's brains would have exploded, man. So much killing and all these fucking humongous words and the flows would have been. I don't even know who would have been good enough to do a beat for that shit, man. Probably the RZA. RZA got beats that fit that kind of content and shit. So
yeah, especially RZA at that time before he got burned out. But
yeah, I was really. We gotta do a Wu Tang episode, man. I'm not even gonna get into it. I want to do a Wu Tang episode
for sure.
Because I've been listening a lot more lately, and really appreciating that he sampled Kung Fu movies and Chinese gangster movies and sampled them. And Raekwon and Ghost are just talking about drug dealing and shit. Like, it's so crazy. Like, all these worlds colliding together and your ears are just like...
I know. It was everything that RZA was producing from 93 to 97 was a masterpiece.
Yeah.
Like, it was a musical masterpiece. It was like, yeah, sure, it's gangster rap, but it's so fresh and rugged and raw. Like, you know, we'll talk about that definitely for another episode, because I can go on and on about Liquid Swords and, you know, God knows what other albums there were.
Nah, yeah, I was listening to, you know what it was? I was listening to Only Built because Raekwon's birthday had just passed.
Oh, okay.
I revisit this shit and just, I was like, I already know the songs I really like and shit, but like, some of the songs, like, I found myself listening to fucking, Winter Wars like crazy and shit.
Well, Winter Wars was on Iron Man.
Yeah, no, not Winter Wars. What's the other song on that album? Let me
Anchor's letting me go into my app.
Hold on, right now. Anchor's letting me go into my apps right now. Thanks, guys. Don't cut off on me. Glaciers of Ice.
At the seventh minute mark with this recording.
Yeah, Glaciers of Ice is what I was revisiting. Glaciers of Ice is insane, man.
Yeah, that's a really good song. That song has a lot of replay value because you don't catch shit the first time when you listen to it.
Yeah, man. You know what's crazy? Diddy put out because Diddy's viral game is on another level right now. So his Instagram game is crazy. So Diddy was like blasting the album out of his Maybach, right? And he's dancing around, bugging, doing them Diddy dances. And I'm like, yo, that's Glaciers of Ice. I know that's Only Built. And kids are under the comments like, yo, what Wu-Tang song is that? What? When did that come out? Who's on that? When did this song come out? And niggas is responding like, yo, that's Only Built for Keeping Links. I mean, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, it's crazy. But, like, it's just so much going on in that song. That woman freaking screaming her lungs, singing her lungs out while fucking Ghost is singing Glaciers of Ice. And that sound is stupid. Like, it's crazy. But, yeah, but I'm sorry. Back to it. Captain Punk.
No, you know, but no, what's funny is that you mentioned RZA, and RZA's album, his debut album, dropped in 98. I totally forgot about that. The Bobby Digital album.
Yo, son, that album was terrible, but.
No, it wasn't.
Yo, I can't get over him rhyming off beat, bro. I'm like, yo, what are we listening to here, man?
Nah, it's true. RZA does have the propensity to rhyme off beat, and which is annoying. But it works for him. I'm telling you, it works for him.
Nah, I remember the presentation of that album being fire. And my cousin, anything Wu-Tang, my cousin bought Killer Bee's album, Master Killer album. You got album, he bought it. Like, my cousin was just a Wu head. And I remember like, yo, what's this Bobby Digital shit? This shit looks crazy. The presentation was ill. The CD packaging was fire.
Yeah.
Once I heard him rhyme on beat, I'm like, yo, I'm trying to catch the beat and catch him rhyming on it. I can't do it. Like, I can't do it.
Hey, I'm one of the people that defend that album. I enjoy that album. I really do.
That's 98 too, for real?
Yeah, that's 98.
That's crazy.
Telling you, 1998 has a lot of albums that you probably forgot about or didn't even realize that dropped.
That's crazy. Because all right, so are we gonna talk about X now or what? Did we talk about X already? Am I bugging?
Yeah, you are bugging. That's the second time you asked me.
Damn, man, it's just those two albums were so fire. Those two albums were so great. I'm looking at the flesh in my flesh right now. It was so fucking awesome.
Yeah, I know. Both of those albums those are just classics. Like, I don't think anybody could argue that they aren't. Like, if you're into New York rap, especially from that era, like, you can't skip over those albums. Basically, that's like required listening.
I'm reading right now. Did you know that he was only the second rapper to ever drop two albums in the same year? That's crazy.
Who was the first?
Tupac, All Eyes on Me, and Illuminati.
Yeah, the Machiavelli shit. Yeah. Wow. Oh, that's right.
I didn't know that. February and November of 1996. That's insane.
Wow.
Yeah, but
that's look at that. That's a nice
out of a contract. X was doing it because he was pushing the fucking envelope. But
yeah, yeah, of course, because it. I think what it is that DMX had already recorded enough material for two albums, so Def Jam was like,
yeah, Leo was like, nah, we're gonna stress this shit out. Hold on, man.
Right?
Leo was like, nah, we ain't having it. It's crazy because that shit dropped at the end of the year, right before Christmas, so everybody was definitely getting their stocking stuffed with this shit, man.
Yeah, well, it's true. It's true. Okay, that was another Flesh of My Flesh, Blood of My Blood was another one of those albums. I was borrowing it from cousins, man.
Yo, that I'm yo. It's so good, Flesh of My. Oh man, I'm gonna play it later. Thanks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the purpose of this episode. Just revisiting nostalgia. Now let's talk about albums that we may not have appreciated at the time, but they hold up very well and are widely regarded as classics. The ones that I'm thinking about are Outkast, Aquemini, and Lauryn Hill.
Lauryn Hill was considered a classic out the gate. I don't know.
Yeah. At the time, yeah, of course, because that album broke barriers.
Yeah, I mean, and that album, I know people that still play that shit like that shit came out yesterday. That album was just, she merged so many different worlds together, like hip-hop, R&B, and had like, she had the Grammy crowd, the white folks, like blasting this album too, like, this woman should be way bigger than she is. And I mean, she's already considered a legend, but she should be way bigger than this, man. Because I mean, she's, mind you, she's still eating off the tails of one album, man. Like that's crazy. I mean,
that's true. I mean, yeah, and she's still eating off the score too. The food.
Oh yeah,
album.
I can't even forget that. Hell yeah. Yeah. Back to what we were saying.
But yeah, man. What I was saying was that it's widely regarded as a classic, and it is a landmark album and all that good stuff, and it sold a huge amount of records and whatnot, deservedly so. But I'm personally not into it all that much because I don't really like the production all that much. Okay. That's just my opinion.
Okay. Well, isn't that a bar 50 Cent said one time?
The bitch put out a CD and have no beats.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess I hear what you're saying.
But the chicks love it.
Yeah, yeah. People love it. People love that album.
Yeah, that was pretty much the catalyst for rap blended in with R&B. And that you could see the influences that album had on people like Drake.
Yeah, for real. I mean, oh, definitely, man. That rapping and singing and be able to do both really well. Like, Lauryn Hill just, like, her trajectory was showing that she was going to be a superstar, but all that personal shit just fucked it up. But whatever. We already know Lauryn Hill's album was a certified classic. It still could hold its weight today, especially since female rap is nowhere near what it was.
Of course.
At that time, MC Light and Lady of Rage and Lauren and all them. So we gotta talk about Aquemini because, and I hate to admit this to people sometimes when we talk about hip hop, but I didn't really get into Outkast until I got into college, bro. Like
me too.
Yo,
me too.
Crazy.
We might have been listening to Outkast simultaneously in separate rooms and not even realize
different parts of campus, man. Because I couldn't. I think it was just. Maybe the flows. I don't know. What do you go first? What do you think? Why didn't it catch your ear back then?
Well, you know what did catch my ear on Aquemini, the Rosa Parks single. Oh, I thought it was a good song.
Right.
And
but it had a really catchy hook. That's why.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And I like the beat and everything like that. And then I remember watching the video on TV as a kid, and I was just like, yeah, these dudes are different. You know, I wouldn't necessarily go out and buy a CD off of them, but. This shit is pretty, it's unique. So, you know, they're putting out more successful singles in subsequent years, like Miss Jackson, So Fresh, So Clean, and then you already know Speaker Box, Love Below, blah, blah, blah. But like you, I didn't really appreciate and like Outkast until my college years, which was like that 2006 to 2010 span, where, you know, I was just like opening my mind to different music that I missed out on or neglected for one reason or another. And to this day, I go back and I revisit Aquemini and I love it each and every time I bump it more than the past. Mm-hmm. I think it's because of the fact that it's so unique and unorthodox in terms of production and lyrical delivery, but it's very entertaining. It has a lot of substance. Like, I'm a big fan of those first three or four Outkast albums now that I'm older, because there's so much to go back and dissect from it. And that's why I think, and mind you, this is just me speaking. I don't speak for everybody, because Aquemini, you know, New York was dominating shit, but Aquemini did go on to sell 4 or 5 million copies. Yeah, that wasn't an album where, like, it just got swept under the rug. Like, that album was very, very successful.
What's the album that they won for where they were saying the South got something to say?
That was the very first album. Southern Playlist, the Cadillac.
Super Playlist.
And that was a dope album, too. But yeah. my personal favorite Outkast albums, now that I've heard their entire discography, are always going to be Aquemini and ATLian.
Yeah,
ATLians. Yeah, that, and that's 96. You know, another one of those classic 96 albums.
That ATLians is, yeah, that one's really good. And it's crazy because Southern Playalistic, when you watch that Dungeon Family.
Oh, the Organized Noise documentary. I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, when you watch that documentary, they had a lot. That they were the production for that. But, like, after that album, that's when Andre had really taught himself how to make beats, so he started, like, you know, gravitating away from them, and their sound started to change slowly but surely. You could tell there's a little bit of a difference even in the documentary. Like, that song, that first song, sort of Playalistic, like, they talking kind of like about cars and shit, it's like
pimp stuff. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And it's like, that's not what they really wanted to do. But, you know, they needed to satisfy the labels and still keep their kind of identity and shit, you know. But, like, the ATLians and fucking Aquemini, man. Yeah, like you said, man, in college I was just listening to it, and I'm like, yo, man, I didn't catch this the first time. I didn't listen to this.
Right.
Like, I think it was too different for us because we were such New York purists, man. And New York rap is all we listen to, you know. Like, nobody was bumping Aquemini in the middle of the block.
Hell,
you know, like, nobody.
Yeah, nobody was. That's the thing. That was really a Southern thing. Like, nobody was really bumping shit like Outkast or Goody Mob or people like that. You know, that's one of those things where if you grew up in New York, you discovered them subsequently based on their success with you know, the later albums.
You had to keep going back, and that's what I did. I kept going back. I'm like, oh, what is this? Oh, I remember one time, it was a song that I probably had skipped when I was kept revisiting. But one time, Entourage ended an episode with a fucking a song from like Aquemini.
Yes, the Art of Storytelling Part Two.
The Art of Storytelling Part One or Part
Two? Wait, let me think back. I think it was Part Two.
It was Andre rapping in the radio, like the recorder voice, and I was like, yo, what the? I remember looking at Dave. You remember my boy Dennis? I'm like, yo, what the fuck song is this? And we Shazammed it, and it was Art of Storytelling. I was like, yo, this is crazy.
Yeah, that was God bless Entourage, but that was the reason why I went back and revisited Aquemini, because I was like, wait, time out, because this just sounds like it could have came out yesterday.
Yeah, for real, right? With them flows and the stuff. Yo, that's crazy.
Yeah, and Aquemini has a lot of memorable joints, like Return of the G, Skewed on the Barbie featuring Raekwon, Synthesizer, fucking Mamacita, Spodioti Dopalicious?
Yeah, Spodioti Dopalicious.
Oh, Chonky Fire.
Chonky Fire, yeah. I remember M. Body.
Yeah, M.
A couple years ago. Okay, so it was the Art of Storytelling Part 2 that played. And I remember the Art of Storytelling Part 1 was a beat that J. Cole had freestyled on, too.
Yeah, well, not even a freestyle. He used it for Born Sinner. It was a song
called That's right.
Land of the Snakes.
Song. Yeah, Land of the Snakes. That's right. But yeah, embodied Chonky Fire. Somebody, who else was on that song with him?
Nah, I think it was... Oh, you know what? It might have been Mr. Porter.
Embodied that shit. I gotta go dig that up. That was crazy.
Yeah, that was around the time where M was doing a lot of those freestyles over the Alchemist beats on Tim Westwood and shit.
Oh, yeah, that's right. With Alki, yeah. That's right. But Yeah, man, Quenma and I had a lot of joints, and it was crazy. So I remember listening to that. I'm like, yo, what the fuck is Raekwon doing on this album? A random fucking feature. Like, what the hell is he doing on this album?
It was super random, but it was funny because it worked.
Yeah, and even on the beat was like goofy. Like, I'm like, yo, this is not something that I could hear. Like, I hear Raekwon on all the time, but he bodied the shit. You know, he killed it.
Yeah, he did. He definitely did.
Damn. What other album? Yo, I think Black Star's album came out that year too.
Oh, that's right. The Black Star. How could I forget about that? The Black Star album. Yeah, Talib Kweli and Mos Def.
Yeah, that was crazy.
That was also one of those albums that I went back and listened to subsequently.
Yeah, they had that song Respiration with Common, definitely. Yeah. That shit was crazy. That was a crazy album too. A lot of just high tech producing most of it and shit.
Yeah, high tech was on the come up at that time. Yeah, this was, man, 98 was no joke. Like, it's now that I'm talking about it and actually thinking back on all the man, I wish I could relive that year now as an adult, so I could really appreciate it.
Right? Or at least like a little bit of an older teenager, like, you know, like, let me be 17 at that age and shit or some shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like, let me be like high school, college age and really appreciate all the music. Because
imagine going to shows back then. The show was probably like $30 and you could see all of them together in one show and shit. Like,
Yeah. Because the tunnel was still around at that time too.
But nah, man. Yeah, like you said.
Oh! You know what else came on 98? Wow. The Gangstar album.
Yeah, Moment of Truth.
Yeah, that album, man, Primo did his thing. I mean, Primo always did his thing with the Gangstar shit, but this album in particular has some of my favorite Gangstar beats.
Mm-hmm. Nah, I mean, this was like, isn't this like the last one?
No, yeah. The last one was 03.
03.
The one that had Right Where You Stand with Jadakiss, that was the last. I think
but they took a big break from 98 to 2003. That's crazy.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? On that Moment of Truth album, that one of those songs is also used in Entourage.
What song? You know My Steez?
No, the one with Inspector Deck, Above the Clouds. That's what
Above the Clouds, right. Yeah, so it says like that in the 90s, this like 98, this album came out in 98, and it was seen as like a curtain call for them because it was like they were really consistent in the 90s. And then, I mean, the owners dropped in 03, but they had a consistent run in the 90s, and this was the last album they put out in the 90s.
Yeah.
03 after that. But yeah, this is crazy. You Know My Steez was that shit.
Yo, You Know My Steez.
Malicia.
The Ox bodied that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. They did body that. I forgot about that freestyle. It's a freestyle, right?
Yeah.
Nah, I forgot about that album too, man. That's crazy. Damn, 98, man. 98 was the last, was when the last Tribe Called Quest album came out before the new one.
Oh, really? That was 98. Oh, what was it called? The Love album? Was it?
The Love Movement.
Oh, okay.
September 29th, 1998. And then they came out with that album they came out with last year.
Damn.
A lot of people were ending their run in the 2000s.
They were like, let me milk this for what it's worth because we ain't competing with the likes of all these guys coming up.
Yeah, and then another group I didn't really get big on, but I respect what they did for hip hop, not rap, hip hop. Beastie Boys, Hello Nasty. They had that song Intergalactic. That shit was crazy.
Yeah, I like that song. Yeah.
It dropped in 98 as well. Yeah, I guess so. But I see the list here. Personal favorites of that year, the Posse Cuts. What we got? What you got for me?
Oh, man. 98 was... You know, you didn't really hear a whole lot of rappers collaborating on Posse Cuts back in the early 90s. Because, yeah, you had your Posse Cuts, but they were more rare than commonplace.
Okay, so Posse Cuts.
Yeah, man. I think... 98 was just it was just a year where all of a sudden it became the norm to feature three or four dope rappers on one track.
Hell yeah.
Because you didn't see it that often before that. Mm-hmm. So when we're thinking about all these classic albums, so you had DMX featuring the Lox and Mace, Niggas Done Started Something. You also had DMX featuring Jay-Z and the Lox with Blackout.
Right.
You had Jay-Z featuring the Lox, Beanie Siegel, and Sauce Money, Reservoir Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
That was fire. Everybody had a dope verse on that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorites, I mean, I have a lot of favorite posse cuts from that era, but, you know, obviously you have Fat Joe with John Blaze, which featured Jadakiss, Nas, Big Pun, and Raekwon. But going back to Swiss Beatz, Banned from TV,
woo!
Nori, LOX, Cam'ron, Big Pun, and Nature. Like, those are some of the ones that, like, really stand out, that are just like, whoa.
Yo,
man. Everybody was going hard on these tracks.
Yo, for real. John Blaze. That whole Don Cartagena album was low-key really fire, too, by the way.
Yeah. Don Cartagena was a really good album. I like that album a lot. That might be Fat Joe's one of his only good albums, actually.
I mean, Jose and the other ones did. I mean, did Jose do what was Jose's standout album, standout song? Jose.
My Lifestyle and What's Love.
Oh no, yeah, forgot about What's Love. Jesus.
Yeah. If the album has sounded more like My Lifestyle, then yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I wanna live my lifestyle. That shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy. Nah, man, you named all the good ones, man. You named all the good. Yo, I remember hearing Niggas Done Started Something. I just excuse me. I remember stumbling onto the song because I don't think I let the album play all the way at the end. Sometimes, like, I would just like go to the songs I like again and again and again. And then when I stumbled onto the song by accident playing the album, I said, "Yo, what the fuck is this, yo?" Like, everybody blacked out on that shit, man. Sheep, SP, everybody, but DMX's verse,
yeah,
was incredible.
DMX's verse on that song gave
you blood. I was like, what
is, yo, DMX's verse on that song would give you nightmares.
Yo, that's one of his best verses ever.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, Surgery with the chainsaw.
Yeah, with the chainsaw. Oh my, and that was like, it was like 32. It was like 22 or 32 bars on the low, because he went in for a while. But
yeah,
who did that beat? Oh my god.
I mean, it was either Dame Grease or PK, because those are the ones that primarily produced that album.
Yo, that beat is crazy. Let's see who did that. Dame Grease. Yup, Niggas Are Starters. Yeah. He did 99% of that album. That's crazy.
Yeah, he co-produced PK, one of the Rough Riders in-house producers on the low. Like, he co-produced a lot of those beats.
Isn't Dame Grease, who's Dame Grease also famous for working with? Am I thinking wrong? Was he the one that worked with Biggie, or am I bugging?
No, the Biggie, that was Easy Mo B. That worked.
Easy Mo B. Right.
Yeah. Nah, Dame Grease, I'm mostly known for DMX and artists like that, but I can't really pinpoint who else he worked with like that.
No, I remember him working with a rapper that's in jail right now, but he had like
My Son. Yeah.
He had a good street buzz. Max B was working with him a lot too.
Oh yeah.
I remember like telling people, I'm like, yo, this is the same producer that worked with DMX, and they never put two and two together. I'm like, yo, that's crazy. His sound literally did a fucking whole transformation, you know? Like, he don't even make beats like that no more.
Nah, he doesn't.
Don't sound nothing like what it did before.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what possessed him to come up with that production, but holy shit.
Yeah, he was channeling something else. But damn, yeah, Banned from TV, like you said, Blackout was crazy. I'm a Monster. I Sleep Cold Winters. Yo, Jay knew whose album this song was gonna be on, because he came ready. Even SP, Catch Me With a 38, Box of Shells. Like, yeah. that everybody blacked out on that. And what was wild was everybody knew that Jadakiss was the star, was gonna be the star, but SP and Sheek were like really more vicious back then, and they were not to be slept on, man. Like, it was crazy.
Not at all. Because if you remember Styles P's verse on Reservoir Dogs, he just starts off by saying, "I don't give a fuck who you are."
Yeah,
so
fuck. Everybody was definitely dissing each other on that shit. And Beanie Siegel was quietly coming up on these verses, man, because More Money, More Cash, More Hoes was DMX, Jay-Z. And because you had Antsy now, that was like 20 minutes. I mean, that was like 2 minutes. What happened?
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, no, after the Posse Cuts talk, then we'll start wrapping it up. Yeah, I mean, everybody was just out for blood on these Posse Cuts. And, like, I feel in hindsight that there were just a lot of subliminal shots being thrown.
Yeah, everybody was fucking with each other. Everybody was dissing each other. But it was friendly. Not friendly, but it was like everybody respected each other's craft. But it was just like, yo, you're not going to make me look stupid on this song. Like,
yeah, you know what it was? It was friendly competition. And I think to wrap the whole topic up of why 98 is such a good focal point for rap nostalgia is because at the time everybody was gunning for that top spot, and you couldn't put out mediocre music at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could not spit garbage. Like, in today's day and age, you can get away with mediocrity. You know, that's just what it is.
You could get away with fucking, oh my God. Music's, there's really good hip-hop out right now, but there's really bad, really, really bad. Like, I feel like there wasn't that much trash out back then as there is now. Like, there's a lot of trash.
Exactly. Exactly. 2 decades later, there's more trash than quality.
Right.
Whereas when we were kids, it was the total opposite.
Yeah.
It was like every other album was hot, or every other song was hot, or every other artist was spitting a really memorable verse. Mm-hmm. It was, you had to come correct. And the Lox, they always say that type of shit in interviews. Like, Jadakiss is always saying, you know, I come from a different era where if you weren't spitting in that booth, you didn't belong there.
Yeah. It's true.
And that's just how it is with the competition. It made everybody up their game. So that in turn, it made for better music. Like, people were just putting out better music because they wanted to be better than the next guy.
Exactly.
You kind of get that somewhat these days, but it's so much different because I feel like the competition aspect of music is gone.
Yeah, no, everybody wants to do songs together and collaborate. I mean, that's one of the things. I mean, I'm not opposed to that, but that's one of the things that Fat Joe said that he didn't like what 50 was trying to do. Like, where a lot of people have commented on it. 50 tried to divide New York instead of bring everybody together. Like, back in the day, like, in the 90s, like, I mean, there was competition, but, like, you heard Posse Cuts. Like, rappers from New York were collaborating with each other. Like, everybody trying to, like, outspit each other, but they were on the same song together and shit. So, like, in the 2000s, it created a whole, like, beef was, like, the big thing, you know? Like, even after the Tupac and Biggie shit, just beef became the big thing in the individual coast and shit. And, I mean, you could blame 50 for that, for real, I think, you know? Because How to Rob was crazy. He dissed everybody.
But, yeah.
But you're right, man. It's just, it's not for us to sound old and bitter, because there's a lot of new stuff I do bump and stuff, and a lot of new stuff that I do not get, you know? But it's just, music is so different now. Now, hip hop and rap has become one of those. We've become the genres, like, we've become the genre that has subgenres, just like rock and roll does. They have alternative rock, they have soft rock, they have indie rock, they have hard rock. You know,
rap
is becoming that too. We have a bunch of subgenres, you know.
I mean, we always had the subgenres even in the 80s, because, you know, you always had your gangster rap, you had your party rap, you had your conscious rap. But now there's even more subgenres, where now you got your acid rap, you got your trap, you got your I don't even know.
We gotta start making up titles, man, and coining them for people to pay us. But there's a lot of different shit out there, man. Like, but you're right, I do agree that it's way more garbage now than it has ever been in hip hop, man. It's because it's not about who could rap better now. It's about who could write the best hook, who could sing that melody better. You know, it's totally different, man. Totally.
That's
different.
A good point. Yeah, who can sing that melody better? Who could utilize the auto-tune better?
Yeah, definitely.
Everybody. I mean, obviously, with the exception of, you know who I'm talking about. We don't even have to say.
Right.
But with the exception of those guys, the ones that are putting out the quality, everybody is jumping on the auto-tune and the melodic choruses.
Yeah.
Like the melodic choruses, that's like the big thing now. Everybody sings now.
Yep, it's true. They want people to have that crossover appeal. That's what I think. That's what I think. Honestly, it's like you're doing these melodic things. I know you're doing it to sound like the person you were influenced to do it by. But like, I don't know, man. It's totally different now, man. It's not even rap anymore. It's becoming something totally different. Which you know what? I can't shit on, man, because people thought hip hop wasn't gonna even make it this far. So in the 90s, people were like, "Yo, this shit is trash." You know, we weren't even getting our awards televised in the Grammys and shit. So
Yeah, that's true.
it's
Rap
totally
has come
different.
a long way for better or for worse.
I mean,
You know, every generation is gonna have their, I guess, their moment. Like this generation, this is the shit that they like, the Lil Pump and the Lil Uzi Verts and
yeah, but then you got people like Kendrick who does the melodic shit, but then he hits you with a fucking a verse that is like, oh shit, what am I listening to right now? This is crazy.
Kendrick is he's kind of like a time capsule MC
Yeah.
where he kind of reminds you of how rap used to be. That's how J. Cole is. That's how, you know, that's how a few of them are.
True,
But
true.
you know, a dude like, I like Travis Scott, but I'm just saying, like a dude like Travis Scott, he's of today's era.
Yeah, and I like Travis Scott too. And I know that's all you have to listen to when you're down there. So, but I love Travis
Yeah,
Scott.
he just got presented with the key to the city, to Missouri City
Well,
over
that's
here.
it, man. You get a Kardashian pregnant, and you get the key to the city, bro. That's
Yeah, I could have made it actually to that ceremony. It
it.
was like 7 minutes away. I'm dead serious.
It's funny.
Yeah, I'm a Mo City representative now.
No, that's fire. That's fire. But nah, man. I mean, it's like, hey, man. We were those same people. We were the kids that were championing these '90s artists when, you know, the old heads were like, "This is trash now." So,
Yeah, that's true.
it's always gonna just keep going back around and around. This shit is.
Nostalgia is a hell of a thing. It'll make you realize just how fast time flies and how old you actually are. But it also makes you appreciate all the things that you grew up with, or all the things that can take you back into a moment of that place in time. 1998, man, after having that conversation with Carlos, man, such an amazing year for a hip hop head like myself. So much content to go back and revisit. I can't wait to actually sit down and make a list of songs and albums and even films that I'd like to go back and revisit. It'll probably take me about a month or two to get through everything. But in any case, 1998, 2 decades ago, 20 years ago, may the music and the culture live on. I am Louis Mercedes, your host. I'm glad you enjoyed this edition of AYNE. Continue to support at anchor.fm/AYNE. Also, check out Carlito's Way since 1988, also on Anchor. Peace out, everybody.